I'm Lucinda Porter. I am nearly 61. Today is July 9th, 2014. We're at the Chicago Cultural Center, and I am a fellow hepatitis C advocate with Alan Franciscus.
And my name's Alan Franciscus, and I am 65, and today is July 9th. And we are at the Chicago Cultural Center, and my relationship to my partner is a friend, colleague, and fellow HCV advocate.
So, Alan, tell me how you got hepatitis C and what led you to become a hepatitis C advocate.
Well, I don't really know how I got hepatitis C. I think I've had it ever since I was a child. I've had so many risk factors. But how I was diagnosed was really interesting because I'd been having really, really severe fatigue. And it was the kind of fatigue where it was sometimes impossible almost to get out of bed or walk around the block. And I was also having a lot of what we call now brain fog, where forgetfulness, not being able to tell time correctly, things like that. So I was going to my doctor for about 10 years trying to find out what was wrong with me. And they ran all these tests and nothing was showing up. And as a result, it leads you to believe that maybe it is all in your head, right? So luckily enough for me, in 1996, my regular doctor retired and a new doctor came in and he said, I'm going to test you for hepatitis C based on your symptoms. And I also had elevated liver enzymes. And I think what's important to know about that is that at that time, and even now, that's very unusual for a doctor to pick up on that. So he tested me for hepatitis C, gave me an antibody test. And it, sort of as an aside to that also, what happens sometimes because of hepatitis C is most providers are uneducated about it. When they did the test and the results came back, his doctor's office called me and left me a message on my answering machine. And back then they had answering machines, that I tested positive for hepatitis C. And I was shocked because one, I never heard of it, and two, that they had the nerve to leave a message on my answering machine that I had this potentially deadly virus. So as a result, I went in and talked to my doctor and his staff, and I really laid it on them really thick that that was really inappropriate. So they agreed with me and said they'd never do it again, but they gave me a viral load test and, you know, it came back positive. So I had hepatitis C. Now, when I realized that, of course, I was very afraid that I had this potentially life-threatening disease, but in many regards, it was almost a relief because, you know, I had this whole scenario that I had this undiagnosed brain tumor or something going on. Bless you. Something going on that, you know, that they couldn't find out and I was going to die the next day. So now I had this concrete, you know, diagnosis that I could do something about. So I went into action and started educating myself. And gave me something to do. So that was a very positive thing. So I put myself into action, learned as much about hepatitis C as I could. And through, I think, a couple of months later, a friend of mine worked for the San Francisco Chronicle as a reporter, and he did a story on me and hepatitis C. And, fortunately, I guess now I can say fortunately, he put my name and phone number in the article, and I got literally hundreds of calls from people all across the country, you know, telling me they had hepatitis C, they wanted information, and it was through a natural progression that I started developing materials and talking to people. And I really felt like I found my calling, that I could educate myself, but also I could help others to understand what it was like to have hepatitis C and to help them to talk to their medical providers and educate them to get better medical care. So that sort of started me on my path for in advocacy. And it really gave me a purpose for what I was doing in my life.
So you've been doing this for how long?
a long time. I actually have my life as pre-Hep C diagnosis and after Hep C diagnosis. I did that. I started doing this in 1996. And through the process, we developed a website and education materials and our training program. So it's been, 15, 16 years, I think, now. Yeah.
So in all that time, you've probably met quite a few patients, quite a few people who are struggling with hepatitis C. Tell me what stories you've heard or what pulls at your heartstrings, what keeps you in this work?
Well, first of all, I think, what's really satisfying about the work that I do is that I think we all, when we're living in our lives, we're all in this very bubble of people that we, our friends and our family that are sort of all the same types of people, the same profession, same lifestyle. And what in this work, you break out of that and you meet literally hundreds and thousands of people that you would never in your life believe that you would meet, and it enriches you so much. And you meet all these different people that you can really have an impact with, and you really bond with, and you really develop deep friendships and relationships with, whether that be advocates such as yourself, Lucinda, or with patients that you can, you can educate and you can change their lives in very easy ways with just, counseling them or giving them information or going to their doctor's appointments with them and standing up for them, things like that.
So, tell me how you would, if I were coming to you and I found out I had hepatitis C, tell me how you think you would start directing me. How would you talk to me?
Well, first of all, I would have you talk to me. I'd want you to tell me your story and what you need to do. I would like to tell you a story. One of the pivotal stories that I heard from somebody when I first started out, I would do counseling in my house. I had no boundaries. I had very low boundaries now, but no boundaries then. And this one fellow came to my house, and it really affected me because he talked about he had substance abuse issues, heavy drug use, and he went into recovery and he got drug and alcohol free. And he talked about how what a struggle that was. And about 6 months after he got in recovery and got clean, he was diagnosed with HIV. And I get very emotional when I think about this. I'll never forget this fellow. And after he got on treatment, saw a doctor for HIV, he got his HIV under control. And then about a year after that, he got diagnosed with hepatitis C. And he said to me, he goes, I don't know what to do, because every time I get something under control, something else knocks me down. And what do you say to a person like that? You would say, just keep doing it. It's gonna do well. And I just tried to talk to him and listen to him, and I never heard from him again. And that person always sticks with me. I always think about that person that, people are suffering out there and they have no one to turn to. And there's all of these huge issues that people face that, we can help. But it's a huge struggle, huge, huge struggle. And if there's anything that I can do to help people with that, I want to do,
What are some of the struggles that you've heard, some of the stories that stick with you besides this one?
Well, the hepatitis C population, unfortunately, is the underserved population. So, there's not a lot of times there's not really good medical care. And you hear about people that when they're diagnosed, they go to their doctor and their doctor will tell them that they assume they got it from injection drug use. And they say, I don't want to take care of you because you're a junkie, and they're turning them away. You hear about people that get, false information, and that's, that's horrible to hear. For example, you hear about people going to their doctor, they've been diagnosed, and their doctor will tell them that there's no treatment for hepatitis C, just go home and it's nothing to worry about, things like that. You hear about people that their doctor just doesn't want to take care of them or want to take the time. They think they're too difficult. And it just breaks your heart, you know, that you hear all these stories from people that just, you know, they have no recourse. They have no advocates for them or nobody to help them through this whole process. And it is a whole process, especially if you're poor. And one of the things that really burns me is when you hear about patients that go to their doctor or go to a doctor's office and they're so disrespected. You know, and then the doctors, you know, you hear from doctors that wonder why patients don't come back. You know, they go, oh, this patient is so unreliable, they don't come back. But yet they come back and they're disrespected. So, you know, duh, why wouldn't I go back, you know? But then these poor people, they fall off because they have no other place to go, you know? So it's just, it's very sad.
Did you hear about stigma from the family members?
Oh, yeah.
Besides the medical system?
And then you have family members that don't understand hepatitis C. So this one fellow was telling me a story in a support group. And by the way, support groups are so important because it's one of the few areas that people can go and feel supported. So this one fellow was saying that he went back to visit his family. I think it was in Tennessee, I think he said. And that they were all having dinner. And after dinner, he went into the kitchen and his mother was breaking the dishes. And he asked, what are you doing? And she goes, well, I don't want to get hep C, so I'm breaking all the dishes. You know, I mean, how horrible is that to think that your family is rejecting you that way? You know, people turn away. People don't tell their family because they're so afraid of being, you know, ostracized by their family.
How do you live with all that pain? You're hearing all these stories. And how do you sleep at night?
How do I sleep at night? Well, I think there's a sense that you have to sort of distance yourself away from that a little bit and just do what you can do, you know. You know, if you take all of that in, there's no way that you can continue with this work. I think that's where, you know, colleagues and friends can help you out when you can unburden yourself with, you know, people like yourself. And we use each other a lot for that to try and unburden ourselves so we don't get burned out, because that can happen very, very easily, as you know.
So you've seen a lot. You've been on the front lines since 1996 and really, you know, more than 17 years of advocacy. What have you seen changed and what has remained the same?
Well, I think the medicines, the drugs to treat hepatitis C, have made incredible advances. Back in the early days, we had a product called interferon that you injected under your skin three times a week with cure rates. And we do know now that you can cure hepatitis C, that were around, you know, 9% with significant side effects, very, very, very significant side effects. In treatments for up to a year, sometimes longer. And then it went to pegylated interferon, which is a longer lasting type of interferon, and a drug called ribavirin. And that treatment lasted for a year, or in my case, I went on treatment for 70 weeks, and I was cured about 10 years ago. But now we have treatments that are gonna be a pill. One particular regime is going to be a pill once a day for 12 weeks. Another regime is going to be multiple pills taken for 12 weeks. And we're going to be able to cure more than 9 out of 10 people. I mean, that is spectacular. And we're going to have much, much less side effects. So that's dramatic advances over the years. But in other areas of hepatitis C, such as testing, we've come quite a long way, but nowhere near where we should. We should be testing everybody that's at risk, had any kind of blood exposure. We should also be testing people born between 1965 and 1965. And that is helping, but we still estimate that anywhere from 50 to 75% of people with hep C have not been diagnosed. So that's a big hurdle. And the government has really not been doing a very, very good job at identifying and providing services for people with hepatitis C. So in that respect, we haven't come very far. But, you know, hope is eternal. Things are, I think, picking up. And we hope that the government will step up to the plate and start doing something, because if nothing's done, there's going to be a huge problem, I mean, huge burden on our society in the not-too-distant future. And one of the things that one of the doctors that we work with, Dr. Diana Silvestri, one of the her taglines is that nobody has to die of hepatitis C. And that's really true, because if you could get everybody diagnosed and the ones that entered care and management and the ones that need to be treated are treated, nobody would die of hepatitis C. That's the sad reality. But unfortunately, we're not doing that. So we're having, you know, like 15,000 people die every year now, if not more. And that's a number that's gonna triple, at least triple the next coming, you know, next few years. So, you know, hopefully the government will start doing more.
Well, you've been doing this work for some time, and I know you well enough to know that you're not planning on retiring anytime soon. Well, what keeps you going? What do you, you know, how do you maintain your determination to keep doing this work?
Well, hepatitis C in many ways is a really fascinating disease, and I think that you know, the work that I do is just so interesting. I love education. I love empowering people, and I just have a passion for it. It's hard to explain. I think that I love helping people that are underserved and that don't have resources. It's just so satisfying, and I mean, it's just hard to explain. It's just a passion that I have. I'm so excited when I can, you know, launch a project that I can see is going to have such an impact on people, and I just feel like I'm in it until the end. I won't be able to be in it till the end, because I refuse to be, you know, I think people would agree that when I'm 90 years old, they don't want to hear me talking, or, you know, running around the world, you know. But I really do think that we do have a possibility of eradicating this disease and improving everybody's life with hepatitis C. But it's the passion that keeps me going. And, you know, having colleagues like you that really fire me up and keep that fire burning.
So what was it like when you had hepatitis C, and then what was it like to go through treatment for it?
Well, you know, having hepatitis C, you know, I had all of that fatigue and that brain fog, and other things too. Treatment was very, very difficult. And I think that's one of the things that my work really helped me with, was that I was so passionate about my work that I just kept doing what I was doing. And I just kept traveling. I kept doing the trainings. I kept working and working. That got me through it. It was tough, but it got me through it. Well, one of the things that really surprised me after treatment was how many of the little things that I had sort of went away. The constant muscle and joint pain prior to treatment got better. I had some skin conditions that got better. Fatigue got much better. The brain fog got somewhat better, but then I got old, so that kind of wiped out that benefit. Just little things sometimes. And, you know, a lot of people say that hepatitis C is asymptomatic, and I really don't believe it. I think a lot of what happens with hepatitis C is that the symptoms come on so gradually that people don't recognize them, but that once you get through treatment successfully, that a lot of those symptoms go away, and then people realize how actual sick they were anyway.
I have a question for you. You talked about your process of being engaged in care and having all these symptoms, and the physician didn't test, and then the doctor left, and a new doctor came in and tested. Were you pissed? I mean, were you mad that, like, all these years, and maybe you could have found out earlier or something?
You know, at the time, it was so early on in Hep C, I was just so relieved, And then when I went out and started looking at the literature was all over the place. Nobody really knew. And, you know, I just really thanked my doctor that he had enough knowledge to test me, because nobody was testing at that time. Nobody at all. And based on symptoms and liver enzymes, nobody was testing. But, you know, I guess I could, but I've never been a person that looked back and regretted. I've always sort of looked forward, you know. I never want to be a bitter old man, you know. And I think that if you look back and you get bitter, you grow up to be a bitter old person.
Well, one thing that's interesting about you is you stepped into the hepatitis C arena without any medical background. And you've written or collected through other writers some of the best hepatitis C patient information there is out there. Did you ever stop and think, what am I doing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have. Well, you know, I think one of the things that's really helped my career in hepatitis C is I have a bit of obsessive compulsive behavior, because when I latch onto something, I really latch onto it. And so when I started doing research, I get into it like obsessively. And so I really started to do research. I took some biology classes. I took some science classes. And I was also, at the time that I was diagnosed, everything sort of came together for me, because I started going back to school just prior to it. I started doing some writing in school. So everything sort of coalesced for me, if that's the right word. And it sort of just took off from there. But yeah, I have surprised myself more than once. And you know, one of the things that I you know, hepatitis C has really broadened my whole outlook on life, because prior to being diagnosed, my three biggest fears were writing, public speaking, and traveling. And now all I ever do is write, public speak, and travel. So there you go, you know. And I think if there's one message you could give to people is that do what you fear the most, because it might be what you like the best.
Well, that's a good question, because I was going to ask you, what is it that you would tell patients about, just something that would help them if they were struggling with hepatitis C? What do you want patients to know?
Learn as much you can, about hepatitis C. Challenge your medical provider. If you don't think that your medical provider is doing right by you, and if you have an opportunity, do you have insurance, of course, is to get another medical provider. I think a lot of patients think that their medical provider is the only person that they can have. But I always like to tell people that if they have a house and they get a roofer, and that roofer comes out and they have a leak in the roof afterwards, what, are they going to hire that roofer again? Nope. They want to get a new roofer. Your doctor works for you. Get another doctor.
That's good advice. So what do you think is the worst thing about living with hepatitis C, or about hepatitis C in general?
I think on a personal level, the worst thing for me was, it wasn't so much that I could die from hepatitis C, it was the suffering. And, you know, with that extreme fatigue, that was horrible to live with every day. And I always thought that if I had to suffer from that fatigue for the rest of my life, it was just horrible.
Do you think that there is a stigma associated with hepatitis C?
There's definitely a stigma associated with hepatitis C. I never personally experienced it that much, but, you know, I lived in San Francisco when I was diagnosed, and San Francisco, pretty much anything goes in San Francisco. But I hear from people all the time that, you know, they feel the stigma of hepatitis C. And in a lot of respects, that's from the close association with injection drug use. Which is unfortunate. And injection drug use is actually probably one of the most stigmatized behaviors. Even in San Francisco, among some of my friends who are the most liberal people in the world, some of the words that come out of their mouths about injection drug use shocks me. And that's very unfortunate. So I hear from people, yeah, that they're stigmatized. They lose their jobs. Because they're, and as an example, this one couple in Oregon that was at a training, and I found that they both had Hep C, and the wife was going to go on treatment, and so the husband went into his employer. They worked the same job, employer, and asked the wife went and asked if it was okay if she took some time off because she had Hep C and she was going to go on treatment, and he also disclosed that he had Hep C, where they were both fired because of that. And so not only were they dealing with treatment, but they were both fired. And unfortunately, they filed a lawsuit, which they won, but then the employer said it was going to be a hardship, so they never got any money for it. And we hear about that happening all the time. Now, on a personal level, when I tell people I have Hep C, they don't really know what to think because they think it's like a foodborne virus or something. So like, oh, did you get that from eating at Chili's or something like that, you know? Or should I cut that out? Okay. But you know, and so you have to educate people in that level too. You know, it is interesting though, because my family, who I'm not really that close to, but I do, you know, I do see occasionally things like that. But through all this stuff about the work that I do, and you know, the work that I do is very powerful, very acknowledged nationally. They never actually talk about hepatitis C. When I was cured, nobody ever said anything about hepatitis C or that I was cured. So, you know, that's a level of stigma right there. You know, so I do feel it. But I have a tendency to sort of ignore it too. I really don't care what people think in general about me. So, you know.
Well, you said it's, you know, you've talked about being cured. I don't know about you, but I still hear people challenge whether we can cure hepatitis C, and yet we know clearly that we can. What do you say to them?
Well, you know, I hate to challenge people's beliefs. I just try to give them the scientific data that, you know, that we do know that there's been a long-term follow-up and 99.9999% of people are still virus-free. But, you know, they come back and say, well, wasn't there like 0.01% that it does come back? And I say, yeah, you know, that's true. But, you know, 99%, that's pretty awesome. And they're saying, yeah, it is. So, you know, just... we have to let them make up their own mind about what they think, you know. So to me, but you know, it's interesting because being a patient, when I got my cure results, it took me a couple of years to really kind of absorb that information and believe it. So again, I think it's up to the individual to accept that. You know?
Well, what took it? What was it that made you accept those results?
I think it was time, and I think it was 2 negative viral loads that I got subsequently after my treatment that kind of affirmed that. And then looking at all the scientific data, you know, that really solidified it for me.
And how did your life change at that point? You did it.
Well, you know, one of the things that was, it didn't really change my life that much, but one very light bulb moment for me was that, and I think this affects a lot of people with hepatitis C, is that your blood feels very infectious. So that when you cut yourself, you're like almost panicking, right? You're like, oh my God, my blood. And I remember one time after I got my cure, I was in the kitchen, I was cutting something and I cut my finger and I went into panic mode. And then all of a sudden I stopped and I go, oh my God, I don't have hepatitis C. And I was like, oh, okay. So I just went over the sink and rinsed off my finger and put a Band-Aid on it. And that was like a aha moment. That was like, wow, I'm really cured, you know. I don't have that inside of me, which I didn't realize that I had.
Well, just the fact that we've seen cure, you know, treatment come about, and we can cure people. Do you think we could actually cure everybody?
I think we're getting to that point, yeah, where we can. But it's going to be getting the medicines to everybody. I mean, we can't even test everybody yet, so you know, we're going to have to. First step is getting people tested. Then the other big leap is going to get everybody into care and then get everybody treated. But we can do it, yeah. I mean, it's just we have to devote some resources and some commitment to it.
Have you ever talked to patients who are very sick or, you know, maybe they have cirrhosis or they might be facing liver cancer, death, or transplantation?
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. It's a horrible, horrible way to go. You see wasting syndrome. In some ways, it reminds you. I used to work in HIV, I'd work at a hospice, and you would see similar, you know, end of life as you did in HIV. It's the wasting syndrome. It's the encephalopathy or dementia. Just horrible, horrible end of life. You know. And unfortunately for hepatitis C, you know, there's not the resources that there are for HIV. So people many times are just left on their own, you know, just horrible. Yeah.
So what in your life occurred before having hepatitis C that helped you become an advocate now?
Well, I think, you know, I think it's my upbringing. I was very, very poor. So I think I really have an understanding of what it's like to be poor, what it's like to be disadvantaged. And I've always been sort of I've always wanted to fight for the underdog, you know. So I've always understood that. And you know, the socially unacceptable, you know, because we were that. And growing up gay, you know, especially back in, you know, the 50s, you know, that was not a very good time to be gay back in the 50s.
Yeah.
So I think that background, but believe it or not, prior to being an advocate for hepatitis C, I was an accountant. So don't hate me for that. But that actually gave me a lot of skills for running my organization, you know, so that was good. But at the same time, I really didn't like being an advocate, I mean, an accountant. So I did a lot of things around HIV. I did a lot of care around HIV and volunteer work. And that was a really good way to sort of segue into advocacy for HCV.
Well, I know you don't like to talk about yourself that much, but and particularly this question might make you uncomfortable, but I know you've made a difference. But could you tell me ways that you know you've made a difference?
I think that, it's really hard for me to talk about it. A lot of what we do at The Advocate is through our website, so it's very difficult to get an idea of, you know, how, what kind of an impact that we're having. But, you know, we do have people that email us and tell us that, you know, that was the first place they had ever heard or got really good, reliable information. I hear from people that the trainings that come up to us and say that, you know, the website saved their life. You know, I have people that come to the trainings and they say they were so inspired that they became a coordinator, a viral hepatitis coordinator, or they decided to get into the work because of that. So I have patients saying that it saved their lives, all those things. So, you know, that's really, really rewarding. But I mean, that's great, great to hear and all that, but I don't kind of dwell on that because it's not why I'm doing it, you know.
Yeah.
Why is it hard for you to talk about your accomplishments? Why is it hard for you to say the impact you've made?
I don't know. I mean, that's not why I'm doing it. So, you know, I've never really had, like, I've never been a person that needs that or wants that. I mean, it's nice to hear, don't get me wrong, but that's not why I do it. So I just try to do what I do and help people and educate and, you know.
So would you say do you provide yourself with accolades or pats on the back?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
What makes you, what is an example you would use that you would say, Alan, nice work?
Well, you know, like after training, you know, and I can really feel like I inspired people and I moved people and I got people really wanting to do something, you know, that it makes me feel really good. I'll get some emails from people saying that, well, thank you for providing that information. You know, I never knew that, you know, having people say that they're going to go into the doctor and ask these questions, you know, I've gone in with patients into their doctor's offices and I've really kind of worked their doctors to provide, you know, better answers and advocacy, things like that. So I know there's things going on that I've done, you know, but I don't know. I don't want to be, you know, I think it's kind of self-serving to be like, you know, I've done all this great stuff.
Well, I know what you mean, but I also know that you have touched the lives of so many people. And so what inspires you who inspires you? What keeps you going?
Well, you know, I was thinking about this when we were talking about this. And one of the things that I don't know if I'm jaded, but, you know, everybody talks about celebrities and how, oh, this celebrity this and this celebrity that. But you know what inspires me is when I hear about somebody that has pulled themselves up from a life of addiction and, you know, made something of themselves. I mean, that to me is somebody that I admire. You know, somebody that goes out and does things to help people. that is what really inspires me. It doesn't, you know, a movie star doesn't inspire me. You know, when somebody goes gaga, oh, look at that person, that's such a great person. You know, well, what has that person done? You know, that doesn't inspire me. But when somebody can really make a difference in somebody's life, when somebody can, you know, rise up from horrible circumstances and do something, that's my person.
You know? Alan, you talked about the accountant part of you when yeah. you had the fear of traveling, public speaking, and writing. Now you that's what you do.
Right.
What have you learned about yourself in that process and some about your own character?
Well, a couple things in that. One is that, you know, one of the things I learned from the work that I do is that I can probably do anything that I put my mind to. You know, if I'm tenacious enough that I can do what I need to do. I learned that in treatment too, with that 70 weeks of treatment that I got through that, I can do anything. And if you have a passion, you can overcome almost any obstacle and enjoy it. I mean, I love the workshops now. I don't love traveling, but I'll do it because I love the workshops. I don't love writing, but I like the end product. So there's ways, if you have a passion, you can do things as long as you have that passion. And you shouldn't really stop yourself from doing things because you're afraid of them. Because many times, and somebody told me that one time, they said, if you're afraid of something, you should do it because that's something that you're going to really probably like to do more than anything you've ever done in your life.
So it sounds like hepatitis C gave you an opportunity to see that passion and to develop that passion. What else has hepatitis C given you? What's something good that came out of having it?
Well, you know, my whole life is so much better now than it was before because, you know, like I said before, my whole horizons have blossomed. I've met so many incredible people. I feel so much more of a person than I was before. I mean, it really is true that, you know, my life before hepatitis C and after hepatitis C, I feel like a different person. I mean, literally a different person. I'm so much more happier now. So hepatitis C has given me all that, you know. It's,
Well, if there was somebody that was facing just, you know, struggling with their own hepatitis C, what would you want them to know? What's something really important?
Well, I think that, you know, educating themselves as much as possible and then to fight for everything they can do to get themselves healthy. Especially these days, you have to fight for your health care. You can't be a passive patient. To fight for a good doctor, fight for your health care, fight for everything that you want. And that's pretty much life these days. You know, you can't be passive. You have to fight.
Well, what can they do themselves that doesn't necessarily rely completely on them just trusting their doctors or something?
Well, I always say, if you have a good doctor, one of the most important things you can do is kiss up to the nurse, because the nurse is the one that provides many times the best care. Mm-hmm. So you want to kiss up to everybody in that office, because they're the ones that many times are doing the best care.
Have you seen any miracles come out of your work or having hepatitis C?
I'm not sure if it's miracles, but I think just one of the things that has really impressed me with everything going on with the work that I do is I've always been sort of controlled, but I just let everything happen, and everything sort of has happened. So I just let, what do you call that? A leap of faith. And I have never worried about money for the project. And somehow it always happens. Things always happen for the project. And that's been a miracle, I think.
Do you think that there is hope for us really seeing, making a difference with the current political climate in Congress?
Okay.
Well, what gives you hope?
What gives me hope? Canada? I don't know. I'm so disillusioned with our government. I just don't know. I think we have to wait until everybody... You can turn this off if you want to. I think once everybody that's over 50 dies, that we'll have a better country.
Definitely want to edit that one out.
Please.